This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The House voted on health care a few days ago. The president may decide on Afghanistan as soon as a few days from now. And, of course, in New York, they're still sweeping up ticker tape. It's Wednesday and time for a championship edition of the Political Junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
But I'm the decider.
Every Wednesday, NPR political editor Ken Rudin joins us for a roundup of all things political. And as always, there's a lot to talk about. The Stupak Amendment fires up pro-choice Democrats. Later, we'll talk with the president of NARAL Pro-Choice America about possible challenges in congressional Democratic primaries. The Club for Growth snubs Governor Charlie Crist and endorses Marco Rubio for the Republican Senate nomination in Florida. Connecticut's governor will not run again. Seattle gets a new mayor. Not so fast in Atlanta. Later, the story of senior citizens in Bangor, Maine, who turn out to greet every flight of U.S. troops to and from Iraq and Afghanistan. But first, political junkie Ken Rudin was with us here in Studio 3A. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Neil.
And as always, we'll start with a trivia question.
Well, today is Veterans Day, and to all the veterans out there and to the families who loaned us their veterans, the appreciation is very heartfelt, of course. Happy Veterans Day to everybody. So a Veterans Day question. Two questions, and you have to answer them both correctly.
Doubleheader.
Okay. Who was the first Vietnam War veteran elected to Congress? Who was the first Iraqi War veteran elected to Congress?
So if you think you know the first Vietnam War veteran and the first Iraq War veteran to be elected to the U.S. Congress, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And, of course, the winner gets a fabulous no-prize T-shirt. Ken, the big political news of the week, we're going to be focusing on some of the political ramifications a bit later in the program. Nevertheless, the House vote on health care is a landmark.
It is a landmark because it's the first time, obviously, we've been talking about health care only, I guess, since the days of Harry Truman.
Yeah.
And the House, by negotiation, by offering its opponents some bones, and we'll talk about those bones later, but the vote was 220 to 215 in favor of the Democratic plan for health care. Only one Republican, Joe Cow of Louisiana, was the only Republican who voted for it, but it also lost 39 Democrats, and so that was pretty interesting, too. It's one thing for Nancy Pelosi to be able to lose 39 Democrats and still pass it. Harry Reid's task is obviously much greater. In the Senate, you lose one and you're in big trouble because you have 58 Democrats plus the two independents. That gets you at the magic number of 60.
And we've already lost one. Joe Lieberman, the independent from Connecticut who caucuses with the Democrats, he's counted as part of that 60, says he won't vote to bring this to the floor.
He won't. He doesn't like the public option. And there are a lot of other Democrats who are nervous, too. Ben Nelson of Nebraska, Mary Landrieu of Louisiana, Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas, who has a potentially tough re-election battle next year. Even Evan Bayh of Indiana. There are several moderate centrist Democrats who are nervous about either not having the abortion language, and Ken Conrad talked about that. Ken Conrad of North Dakota talked about that too, that he wants that language in there. Ben Nelson of Nebraska also talked about wanting the kind of Stupak type language in the Senate bill. And then you have the public option battle, and of course Olympia Snow and other Republicans say there's no way we come on board if Harry Reid asked, we have the public option in the Senate version.
Unless there's some sort of trigger, which is what she wants. This would only take effect if certain numbers of things happened down the road. Anyway, it's important to remember, yes, the House voted to approve this, but you do need a vote in the Senate to get a Senate bill out. Then the Senate and the House would have to meet and agree on one version of the bill, which would again have to pass the House and the Senate. All that before it would go to President Obama's desk.
Right. Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, said there will be a vote next week in the Senate, a vote basically to bring the issue to the floor. And, of course, you'll need 60 votes for that, too. Some Democrats, and many Democrats actually, have said that it's perhaps time for President Obama to start twisting arms. He's been very conspicuously absent, even though they're very involved in the negotiations. But publicly, he's basically let them write out the language. We now have the language in the House. which passed on Saturday. We'll know next week the language in the Senate, and then perhaps the White House will step up its lobbying.
In the meantime, we still have some things to clean up from last week's elections. The mayor's race in Seattle finally decided.
Yes, it's Seattle has a mail. One of the reasons it took so long is because it's mail only, and of course that means women can't vote. By the way, I used that joke once before, and I got a lot of complaining
you
emails.
You did. I can't imagine why.
So I won't use it again. But you can postmark your ballot for Seattle mayor as Tuesday night, so that's why it took so long. But they do have a result as of Monday, and a guy named Mike McGinn, who is a Sierra Club activist, a community activist, basically the least well-funded, the least well-known of the three candidates, the initial three candidates, and somebody who basically had told just volunteer army, and yet he won by like 4,900 votes out of 190,000 cast.
In the meantime, we have a runoff yet to go in Atlanta.
Right, we have a runoff in Atlanta, and what's interesting there is that Mary Norwood is the white candidate. Of course, there are other issues other than race, but it's interesting to know that Mary Norwood is one of the two candidates going into the December runoff, and if elected, she'd be the first white mayor there since the early 1970s.
In the meantime, we have some people on the line who think they know the answer to this week's trivia question. Again, you've got to get both parts of this right. The first Vietnam War veteran to be elected to the U.S. Congress, and the first Iraq War veteran to be elected to the U.S. Congress. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org, and we'll start with Mark. Mark with us from Wynwood in Pennsylvania.
Hi, I think I'm probably wrong on this, but I think I'm putting down Kerry for the first Vietnam.
John Kerry of Massachusetts?
Right, and Murphy, congressman from Pennsylvania for Iraq.
Patrick Murphy.
Patrick Murphy.
That is not correct. That is not the correct answer.
Mark, good try.
Thank you.
But see if we can go next to, this is John. John with us from Newtown in Pennsylvania.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm going to guess, like the previous caller, Patrick Murphy for the first Iraq War vet, my congressman from the PA-8. And I'm going to guess John McCain for the first Vietnam War veteran.
Naval aviator, longtime prisoner of war, Annapolis graduate John McCain.
And the same as with the first person, you got one of them correct and one of them incorrect. So you're thus incorrect.
Totally wrong. That's right. Nice try, John.
Thank you.
Let's see if we can go. And let's try next. This is an email from Marge. She says, Mirtha and Sestak. That's John and Joe, I think.
Right, and that is not the correct answer either.
All right, let's see if we can go next to Chris. Chris is with us from Spring Hill in Tennessee.
Hi, it's both from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. John Mirtha was the first Vietnam vet, and my old law professor at West Point, Patrick Murphy, was the first Iraq vet.
And that is the correct answer.
Ding, 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 ding. All right, Chris, you're the winner of a fabulous No Prize T-shirt.
John Mirtha was elected in a special election in 1974, one of those so-called Watergate elections that proved bad news for the Republican Party in 74. And so obviously that was John Kerry was 1984 when he was elected to the Senate. John McCain was 1982, so they came after Mirtha. And then Patrick Murphy is correct for Iraq War.
All right, Chris, we're going to put you on hold, and you're going to get that T-shirt in exchange for a promise to take a digital picture of yourself and mail it to us so we can put you on our wall of shame.
Well, thanks so much.
All right, hold on.
Can I just say one thing about the famous wall of shame? There was an article. Last week's winner was a state representative from the state of Idaho, and there was a very nice article in this week's, well, it's a daily paper, of course, the Idaho Statesman talked about how excited, which is very scary to me, but how excited.
That's before he gets the T-shirt.
That's right. The winner was, so it's a very nice article. It's in my blog.
All right. Well, that's very nice. And
I told you I wrote a blog.
You write a blog? Uh-huh. Where could somebody go to see that
I have
blog?
No idea. NPR.org/junkie.
NPR.org/junkie. I think there's a podcast available,
there is,
too.
There is, yeah.
So
yeah.
If you don't get enough Ken Rudin, there's always a way to get more. Anyway, as we begin to look ahead towards 2010, that's the first thing the day after the last elections, well, there's some new polls out that suggest that people are very dissatisfied with the way things are going in the country and the way things are going with their politicians.
Yes, that's true. And we saw that in the election day last Tuesday when there was seemingly a clear anti-incumbent sentiment. The Democrats were voted out of office in both the Virginia and New Jersey governorships, even though the incumbent wasn't at stake. And also Mike Bloomberg in New York City spent $100 million, which is more than I make in 2 years at NPR. and he barely won. 51-46 over William Thompson. So we saw that around the country that there are a lot of people nervousness. But the other reason, other people who should be nervous perhaps are Democrats, because there seems to be an indication, you can't only go by the Gallup poll that came out today, but it still was interesting, that showed that independents are moving well clearly towards the Republican Party. Back in July, the Democrats had a 1-point lead among independents. Now the Republicans have a 22-point lead, 52-30. Gallup is probably more optimistic than other polls. They shows Democrats. But in a generic 2010 battle for Congress, Republicans have a 4-point lead in the Gallup poll, and that's something to watch.
The Pew poll does not show that that big a switch. And nevertheless, it could be a very interesting time. Interesting, the Pew poll showed that President Obama's approval ratings are not down. They're 51%, not great, but holding.
Right, and I think that's why a lot of people say that it's wrong, and I agree with this analysis, that it's wrong to say that last Tuesday's elections were a referendum on President Obama. I think that's oversimplifying things, but it did show worrying signs for the Democrats.
One other item we should mention, there is going to be a new governor of Connecticut.
There will be Jody Rell, who is probably one of the more popular politicians in Connecticut. She took over when John Rowland, another Republican, resigned and went to prison.
Scandal, yeah.
Scandal, right. But no Democrat has won that governorship in Connecticut since 1986. For a blue state, that's a pretty long time. There's a bunch of Democrats running, including Ned Lamont, who defeated Joe Lieberman in the 2006 Senate primary, but then, of course, lost to Lieberman. But he is among the many Democrats who are hoping to win that seat in 2010.
And many Democrats, of course, also awaiting the president's decision on Afghanistan, which could have quite an impact on how they do next time around.
I think the agreement is, the understanding is that there will be more troops sent, and the question is how many. Joe Biden's kind of way of looking at it is like 10,000 to 15,000 more troops. General Stanley McChrystal, of course, is talking about 40,000 to 45,000 more troops. It'll probably be somewhere in the middle there, but I suspect we won't have an answer for that until after Thanksgiving.
It's the Political Junkie coming up next. Nancy Keenan, president of NARAL Pro-Choice America, plus your calls on this question. Should pro-choice Democrats challenge pro-life members of their own party? Give us a call, 800-989-8255, or zap us an email. The address is talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
I want to grow up to be a politician and take over this beautiful land.
This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. If you're just joining us, NPR political editor Ken Rudin is with us for our weekly Political Junkie segment, and we turn now to one of the political controversies among many that has been brewing within the larger debate over health care reform. Earlier this week, Nancy Keenan, the president of NARAL Pro-Choice America, said her organization would oppose a final health care bill if it includes the so-called STUPAC amendment, which would ban federal funding of most abortions. And she means business. Keenan has also hinted that when the next round of primaries roll around, NARAL might fund pro-choice opponents of conservative Democrats who voted for the amendment. She'll join us in just a moment. If you're a Democrat, would you like to see pro-choice Democrats challenge moderate and conservative Democrats where you live? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Nancy Keenan, very nice of you to be with us today.
Well, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And the STUPAC amendment, give us your take on it.
Oh, gosh. The STUPAC amendment, it is an abortion ban that means that women in this country cannot buy health care insurance that would cover abortion care with their own money. With their own money.
Well, wait a minute. The idea was to an extension of the Hyde Amendment, which prevents the spending of federal money on abortion.
Correct. But let's keep in mind that the Hyde Amendment is a status quo, that the bill originally had language in it that prohibited federal monies to be spent on abortion in this country. That was in the bill. So the STUPAC amendment goes far, far beyond the status quo and actually is denying women to access insurance coverage that covers abortion care with their own money in the exchange. Right now in America, about 80 to 85% of private insurance companies cover abortion care. Mm-hmm. So they would lose that if the Stupak Amendment eventually prevails.
Now, some people disagree with your analysis, but even if it's right, is this so important that this on this issue alone, it would be enough for you to oppose a health care plan that would bring tens of millions more people and get them covered?
Look, we're going to take this a step at a time. I've been around politics long enough that this road is very long. And the first thing that we're doing right now, we've turned our attention entirely to the United States Senate. We are going to make sure and are already contacting Senator Reid to say that language is not acceptable and it can't be in the bill. We then will be contacting every one of those senators on that side of the equation and making sure they understand that this goes beyond the status quo, that this goes beyond Hyde, and that it's not acceptable, and we expect them to stand with us and stand with women in this country to not lose ground under the health care reform bill.
And we keep mentioning the Hyde Amendment. Henry Hyde of Illinois, of course, the former longtime member of the House of Representatives. Ken.
Nancy, obviously it's a shame that we have to have a choice between health care and abortion rights, and I think that's what put a lot of that was the choice among many members. But having said that, do you understand what Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, was up against? She needed it passed, and there are some pro-life Democrats who said that there's no way I vote for this without a Stupak amendment. And Nancy Pelosi's goal from the beginning was to get this passed and get it over to the Senate.
Yeah, let's be clear here. There was a compromise in that original bill in the House. It was called the CAPS Amendment. And that compromise basically reinforced that there would be no federal dollars spent on abortion in this country, the status quo, if you will. And then what happened kind of in the late of night, and I understand, I've been in politics all my life as a former elected official. I know it comes down to votes. And what the Speaker was up against was somehow basically finding enough votes to pass that bill. What's sad here and who the true enemy here and where the blame lies here is on those anti-choice politicians who wanted to hijack the health care reform bill in this country, who want to outlaw abortion care in this country, and they ultimately want to defeat any bill from ever passing the United States Congress. So I lie this squarely on the shoulders of those anti-choice politicians who have made this, the issue of abortion, a political football in the health care reform debate, and that is wrong.
That was 64 Democrats out of that's a pretty sizable number.
That's right. And let's keep in mind that even though there is a pro-choice majority of Democrats in the United States House, there are only 185 pro-choice members in the House. There are 203 anti-choice, and this 47 that are kind of in the middle, we call them mixed. So the numbers were challenging, but nonetheless, the fight's not over. We turn our attention to the Senate, and we expect and will fight to make sure that the Stupak language does not prevail.
In the meantime, are you serious about funding challengers to Democratic primaries, challengers who would be pro-choice to Democrats who voted for the Stupak Amendment?
You know, absolutely. Now, I'm a former politician, so I'm not going to talk about all my strategy on the radio. I want my opponents to
Don't you hate these people?
You know, I've been there, done that, you know, in the sense that, you know, I've got to keep them guessing. But yes, it is not off the table. And I am very serious. And it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat, a Republican, or an independent. We will put up a primary challenger against you. If these people stood with Stupak, then they stood against the women of this country, and we will not tolerate it.
Most of these people are from districts which could go either way, even if it means electing a Republican. This is more
important. Well, we're very strategic, we're very pragmatic, and we're going to go where we can win. Let's make sure that we're going to go where we can win. But we are not, we don't have a party. And our party is pro-choice. And we're just going to make sure that this kind of nonsense doesn't continue and that we eventually have a pro-choice majority in the United States Congress.
Just talking tactics, there were some conservative Republicans who thought they could win in the Maryland 1st and they could win in the New York 23rd, mm-hmm. and they were wrong.
Well, that's true. That's true. And, you know, politics, it is the game and it's votes on the margins. And so, again, as I said, I'm not going to discuss all the strategy here. I love surprising our opponents. But my bottom line is that if those politicians that stood with Stupak and stood against the American women, we're prepared to set some challenges up.
Let's see if we get some callers in on the conversation. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Our guest is Nancy Keenan, president of NARAL Pro-Choice America. Of course, political junkie Ken Rudin is with us. And let's start with David. David calling us from Denver.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I am a Democrat and a lifelong, in terms of my adulthood, Democrat, and I agree that we should run challengers to those who have supported the Stupak Amendment, and I'm glad to hear the vigorous difficulty that has been expressed here with the Stupak Amendment. I would take exception to the use of the word pro or the term pro life to describe those.
David, let's have that. David, can we have that argument another time? We're talking about political tactics here.
Well, we're also talking linguistics, and pro-life is anti-choice. Pro-life is back alley abortions are not pro-life.
Well, the other side would say you're pro-abortion. So let's not get into the argument.
I'm not. I am pro-choice, and they are anti-choice.
So let's,
it's very
all right,
simple.
David,
and this is an important
David, this
linguistic
is, this
discussion.
Is, this is why we're not going to get into this conversation. Thanks very much for the phone call. This is people are going to get into this. It's a very emotional issue. Mm-hmm. And obviously for NARAL, Pro-Choice America, it is the issue.
Absolutely. You know, and look, there are strong emotions on both sides of this. And, and maybe we can agree to disagree. There are people that are never going to agree on the pro-choice position, and we will probably never agree on the anti-choice position. But nonetheless, I think there are some areas that we can agree on. I believe that contraception should be made available to women in this country. I believe that we should teach honest sex education. I think that that's a place where people could agree. And while still making sure that abortion is kept safe and legal in this country. But nonetheless, yeah, their emotions run high. You have to respect that. But at the same time, I think what happened this Saturday night in the United States House of Representatives was unacceptable. And I think their ultimate goal, it was to basically stop health care reform in this country and overturn abortion coverage in this country.
Ken?
Martha Coakley, who's running for the Senate in Massachusetts, said the other day that if the Stupak language is included mm-hmm. in the Senate bill, she would have voted against it. Mm-hmm. My question is, if let's say the Senate does its thing and the final language that both the House and Senate have to vote on does not include the Stupak language, it's possible that many or some of the 64 Democrats who voted for Stupak may sit out that vote mm-hmm. As the final vote.
You know, I don't think we can predict that yet. I mean, again, we've got a long way to go, and politics is about that step at a time, and it is about that strategic move. It's like a chessboard. You make a move, and somebody else moves. I think at the end of the day, if the Stupak language is removed from both bills, and we have what was known as the CAPS compromise, I think ultimately that will prevail, and that the people of this country and those members will vote for health care reform. Again, because it is the status quo. It is not going as far as Stupak has wanted. And I think there's good common sense on the Senate side. Cooler heads prevail. And I think that absolutely we'll find that there is that CAPS compromise, maybe a little bit more tweaking, and folks will find their way to vote for it.
Here's an email we have from Keith in Minneapolis. I'm a Democrat. I think running pro-choice candidates against moderate and conservative Democrats is a terrible idea. The only thing it would achieve is to guarantee conservative pro-life Republican candidates who are firmly against abortion rights will be elected to replace moderate Democrats.
You know, it's a very good point. And look, like I said, I've been around politics all my life. And we look at the district. We are not so foolish to go into somewhere and actually take out, in this case, what he's arguing, a moderate Democrat, and end up with a very, very conservative Republican. But there are districts that we could win that could have a majority of Democrats. A Democrat's going to win that district no matter what. And if I can take out an anti-choice Democrat with a pro-choice Democrat in that district and still hold on to that district. Those are the kind of politics pragmatism that we're talking about.
And again, sometimes you think you can and maybe you can't, but we'll talk about that later. Let's go next to Raymond. Raymond with us from Pontiac in Michigan.
How's it going? Happy Veterans Day.
Happy Veterans Day.
I'm a 28-year-old center-leaning Democrat myself. And I think doing this could end up being cutting off your nose to spite your face. It sounds a lot like what the Republicans are doing by marginalizing and literally kicking out their moderate and maybe a little more liberal-leaning Republican brother.
You know, yeah, Raymond, again, like I said, this country is a very diverse country. And people that represent the country from all over. I come from Montana originally. It would have been a pretty red state at one time, but when I was growing up, it was a very, very progressive state. And the fact of the matter is again, we're very pragmatic about this. We will make sure that if we go into a district and challenge a sitting incumbent that anti-choice, you know, we're not going to be so foolish to allow an anti-choice Republican, independent, or Democrat to retain that seat. So, you know, we're not foolish here. Again, we're pragmatic, we're strategic, but my bottom line is, these folks this time around, and some of them were pro-choice, these folks that voted and stood with Stupak is unacceptable. And I have consistently said when they stood with Stupak, they stood against women in this country. And for us, they have to be held accountable.
So in a way, this is a luxury. It's the luxury of having a big enough majority that even if you should lose one or two seats on this issue, it's not going to make a difference to who controls Congress, you think?
Absolutely. And again, even though we have a pro-choice or we have a Democratic majority right now, I think that the people of America didn't realize that we did not have a pro-choice majority. We are still very challenged, as I said. The people that are right now in Congress, the majority are anti-choice. And we do have to change that balance here if we are going to really make women's lives better.
Thanks very much for the call, Raymond. Appreciate it. We're talking with Nancy Keenan, president of NARAL Pro-Choice America. Ken Rudin, our political junkie, is with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can go next. This is Paul. Paul with us from Maryland's Eastern Shore.
Howdy.
Howdy.
Yes, I'm calling as a lifelong Democrat in my mid-50s, and I would oppose that strong consideration of that strategy in 2 years, say, in the primaries, because I see it as a opponents of health care reform at all from the other side of the aisle are no doubt firing every torpedo they can think of to try to sink it. And I think this is one of them. If they succeed in driving the debate to the point where the Democrats, whether, say, for NARAL, split the party in the next election, the other side's going to clean up, just like the Republicans found out in upstate New York and many people in many other elections. You split one major party, the other side's going to clean up.
And, Paul, is your Congressman Frank Craterville?
I believe the first-year Democrat.
Yes, indeed. He's one of those Democrats who voted for the Stupak.
Well, let's look broader than just the Democratic Party here. And let's take a look that in the last two election cycles, NARAL Pro-Choice America ousted, 06-08, 44 anti-choice Republicans. 44 anti-choice Republicans that we defeated with pro-choice Democrats in the 06-08 cycle. So we've gotten kind of hung up on the primaries here and keeping people accountable, but I am every day working to defeat just as many anti-choice Republicans and independents, if that's the case. In the Senate, same cycle, 06-08, we picked up nine pro-choice seats in the Senate. And those were held by anti-choice Republicans. So in a way, we have advanced this party's majority by electing pro-choice Democrats over anti-choice Republicans in the last two cycles.
And could I ask your guest for one more take on my home turf, Maryland? I was actually recruited in an interview by the family of a strong Republican contender who doesn't think he's cannon fodder for Mikulski.
Who doesn't think he would lose to Barbara Mikulski in a Senate race?
In 2 years when she's up.
Barbara Mikulski's prospects in 2 years, Ken Rudin?
Her chances of losing, slim and none.
Yeah, I looked at that with the 68% vote back in majority. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
Well, Barbara Mikulski is one of our biggest champions. I mean, let's be clear about this. She understands the impact this kinds of bad legislation have on women, not only in Maryland, but across the country.
Paul, thanks very much for the phone call. Very quickly, Ken.
Nancy, I was just going to say, but of course, a lot of pro-choice Republicans like Chris Shays, like Nancy Johnson, also went down to the defeat in this anti-Republican tide. And if Democrats want to have this majority, they're going to have to, as Chuck Schumer says, we'll have to have pro-gun, pro-life candidates as well. And that puts you in a strange position as well.
Well, sure. But I think, you know, let me tell you, I believe that this country is fundamentally pro-choice. I believe this country understands that politicians don't belong between a woman, her doctor, and her God. And that, yes, it might be reflective that you see the country being conservative in some areas and a little bit more liberal in others, but fundamentally, this right to privacy, this right to freedom is something that's not only held by Democrats, it's quite honestly held by Republicans as well. And that's a fundamental freedom that we should protect.
Nancy Keenan, thanks very much for your time today. We appreciate it. Nancy Keenan is president of NARAL Pro-Choice America. And finally, Ken, in the few seconds we have left to go, a trivia question for you this week. There's a big birthday coming up on Friday. It is the birthday of what former presidential candidate?
Fred Harris. Did you know that?
I did know Fred Harris.
Fred Harris's birthday is November 13th. You know why I know that?
Because it is also Tom Vilsack's birthday.
It's also Ken Rudin's birthday.
No.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Really?
I'm going to be 18.
18
I can,
again.
I can vote.
All right, Ken.
It's the fifth time.
We're all going to gather to buy Ken a drink. Okay. Ken Rudin, NPR's political junkie, joins us here every Wednesday. You can go to npr.org and read his blog and listen to his podcast. We'll see him again next week. Coming up next, it's also the anniversary of the first World Championship Bridge Contest. I bet you didn't know that.
I did not.
Anyway, coming up, we're going to be talking about a new documentary that tells the story of the residents of Bangor, Maine, who greet every incoming and outgoing military flight. What happens is a little bit more than you might expect. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.